Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a special edition of the show. We head to China with Governor Newsom. He is following a long tradition of California governors started by Arnold Schwarzenegger, followed by Jerry Brown, and now Governor Schwarzenegger to go to China. China, the biggest trade partner of California, and also one of the most important, or the most important, country when it comes to climate change. California has always been at the forefront of fighting climate change. China pollutes more than any other country in the world. And both Governor Schwarzenegger and Governor Brown and now Governor Newsom all believe that if China doesn't get its act together on climate change, it really doesn't matter what California and the United States are doing. And the only way to solve climate change is with China and the United States working together. Governor Newsom calls it the G2. Basically, they're the two biggest, most important countries in this space. The other thing is, we're at an inflection point in the relationship between China and the U.S. COVID obviously made things more tense with COVID coming from China and then the politics of COVID that came afterwards. And there are a lot of folks, especially on the right, who are very, very, very frustrated with China. And the governor, with this trip, hoping to ease some of that tension and to take things down a notch. I headed out there as the only TV reporter on the trip. There were also colleagues from the San Francisco Chronicle and Politico and also the LA Times who were along for the ride. It was unlike anything I'd ever done before. We took off. It was like a 15-hour flight to get there, working 18-hour days, traveling all over China, starting in Hong Kong, then heading on to the mainland where things got more intense, signing a bunch of these memorandums of understanding, five of them in total, working with some of the governments. These are non-binding legal documents, but they are sort of an agreement to work together on the climate issues. And there was a lot of photo ops because Governor Newsom understands the visual of all of this, from the Great Wall of China to the Forbidden City. We saw cranes at a nature reserve. We saw a giant wind farm. We saw Teslas being built. We saw new technology in terms of electric buses and electric cars. I mean, all of it, every day, there was so much packed into it. And there was this photo op gone wrong at a Beijing elementary school where the governor slipped playing basketball and crashed into a kid, which, of course, got millions of views. But overall, it was really striking to see how much attention Governor Newsom got. He got a police escort everywhere he went. He got all sorts of Chinese state media. He was all over the place in their newspapers as well. He got a meeting with the president. An extension of how important California is, the United States is, climate is as an issue, and how he is as a potential presidential candidate. And that was very much something that was not talked about, but was something that I think everybody was thinking about on the trip. So it was really fascinating. At the end of the trip, we sat down for a conversation. The sound isn't great. It's the first time that I tried to shoot and edit and also just do the sound and lights and everything for an interview. I was the only one there. Usually I have a couple photographers and sound experts. I had none of that on the trip because of credentials and prices and all the rest of it. So it's so-so, but I think you get the sense of what he's saying, and it's an important conversation, and it's good that he's on the record. I highly, highly, highly encourage you to check out my YouTube page, youtube.com/AlexMichelson, to watch the video, to see the trip, to go through it with us. I think that's the best way to experience this. But this is a conversation, includes a lot of stuff that we didn't include in that show. Him on the record, not only on this trip, but also on things like the satellites that are upcoming and COVID and other topics, high-speed rail, other topics as well. So I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I hope you'll check out our YouTube page. But without further ado, here is our one-on-one with Governor Gavin Newsom.
Governor, welcome back to The Issue Is from China.
Of all places. Go figure. Shanghai or is it Beijing?
So we have spent the week together. What do you think is the most important takeaway for you from this whole week?
Well, I think the willingness for the Chinese to embrace the message, not just the messenger. We've been treated extraordinarily well, but the issue of climate change. And they wouldn't have met knowing that was the agenda, unless they were committed to doing more in this space. And I think that's reflective of the experience we've had this week, the fact that we signed five MOUs, and the fact that President Biden announced, as we were here, that he'll be meeting with President Xi in California in a few weeks.
Do you think that would have happened if you hadn't had your meeting?
Yeah, I think it likely would have, but I think this gives a little more momentum. And the fact that we were with the foreign minister in two meetings, and then he got on a plane after the second meeting, he was in with President Xi, myself, and others, and then met with our Secretary of State, and then met with the President to formally announce. There was a continuity, a consistency of the messaging, and the engagement as it relates to the meetings we had in terms of the readouts of what we saw in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so let's go into the Xi meeting, because that's the biggest meeting of the week. I was walking in there with you, this hall, which is like unlike anything I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
And there's like trumpets blaring and there's soldiers walking.
Yeah, they don't screw around.
What's going through your mind? Walk us through that whole
experience.
I guess
it was what I expected. Just as a student of history, in terms of our contemporary history and the history we're all trying to make together. It was what I've seen on the screen, though, being there in person and sort of experientially walking in on that red carpet, as we all did, in that Stalin building that was donated to the Chinese government in the 50s. I mean, that's quite remarkable. It's a structure that exudes power and exudes place, and it's intended to be what it is. It was sort of overwhelming for any visitor. It's a home field advantage,
right.
I guess. I don't know what it's analogous to.
Well, they say the Oval Office is the greatest home field advantage for the president when somebody walks in there, but I think that might
have
been more intimidating.
I think they're trying to replicate that. But again, there's a familiarity when you see people. I guess it is old adage, but you see people on TV all the time, like, I know you.
Right.
and then you have the opportunity to spend time with someone, and it was surprisingly relaxing.
So let's get into the meeting itself. The points you make to Xi, talk about climate change.
Yeah.
You also talk about fentanyl.
Yeah.
What'd you say, and what was his reaction?
Well, the meeting was niceties first. It was a lot about California. It was about San Francisco. How many times he's visited? Three times. Vice President present, and in 1985, his first visit through San Francisco on his way to Iowa, and his memories of San Francisco, particularly the Golden Gate Bridge. So just on the human-to-human side, just that softener. And then we got into the issue, the reason I was there, around climate change. And he knew that. He was certainly prepared. He was well aware of where we were in our previous journey, at least the previous days, and where we were going next. So he was teed up for that and was very mindful of what that agenda represented to me. And then we transitioned to fentanyl. And I told him personally, this is, it's the number one killer of people 18 to 49 in the United States of America. It's taking one life a day. In the place that I hope you visit in San Francisco at APEC in a few weeks, as we transition to the formal invitation, of course, to APEC as the host state governor. But it was an interesting transition, and he was very prepared for that part of the conversation as well, even though there was no preparation in advance that I would bring that up.
You didn't bring up the issue of human rights directly to President Xi. You brought it up to the foreign minister.
And the vice president.
You know there are folks on both the left and the right who are disappointed by that. You clearly made a strategic choice to do that. What was your thinking there?
Well, we're with the foreign minister. It was in the meeting with Xi. I spent an hour with the foreign minister, and that was the appropriate venue on the basis of the conversations I had with the State Department and on the basis of the fact that that would be a better place to communicate a more nuanced and detailed explanation of our points of view on the issue of human rights and democracy, on issues related to Taiwan, issues related to international and foreign policy more broadly. And we took the limited time we had with Xi, which we were told would be just 20 minutes. And we had the opportunity to extend it to 45, and I didn't want to miss the opportunity in those 20 minutes to reinforce the reason I was there. Not as President of the United States, not as Secretary of State, but as a governor of one of the largest states and one of the largest economies in the world, to focus on low carbon green growth. And I didn't want to miss that opportunity and moment to influence this foundational agenda, which is bigger than any situational agenda in our lifetime.
I mean, some of the thinking, if you do that, he goes like this, and he's not open to anything else.
I had an opportunity to talk about the most important issue in our lives. It's the most important issue.
Yeah.
Everything else is situational. This is the most sustainable issue. It's changing everything. And what happens is our mind gets so short-fused on the situation that we miss this foundational shift in our lives. It's changing geopolitical politics, changing the way we live, changing the way we breathe, changing our health patterns, changing our wealth patterns, changing migration around the world. There's no more consequential issue in the world today, mm-hmm. long and medium term, and increasingly short term, than the issue of climate change, as important as all those other issues are.
It's been remarkable to see the reaction to you throughout the week. Lots of cameras, you've been all over state media.
Yeah.
In every meeting, somebody refers to you as handsome, which is a little weird.
It's weird.
It's weird, right? It's a little weird.
No.
What do you think that though has done for U.S.-China relations and China-California relations, maybe tourism, all the
rest
of it?
I think it's helped. I mean, in the context of humanizing, we're human beings after all. We talk about China relations and we talk about the United States. It's an abstract. It's an intellectual capacity to have a human being attached to these conversations, to be able to communicate as human beings, to talk about areas of common concern and common humanity. I think is incredibly powerful. And the fact that I'm the first governor who's been here 4.5 years, and the fact that we're talking about the issue that is the issue that will define the fate and future of this planet, and that's the issue of climate change, and to be able to have this kind of access with the vice president, the foreign minister, with every major minister, and have substantive conversations, detailed, nuanced conversations, not just platitudes and photo ops, to sign 5 MOUs that we negotiated for months mm-hmm. before we got here as a governor. That's extraordinary, and I'm blessed and humbled by it.
Are you concerned, though, that some of those images of you may be used as sort of propaganda by an administration that a lot of people see as repressive and yeah. communist?
Well, I mean, I was here 3 prior occasions. You had a bipartisan, you had Republicans and Democrats here just a few weeks ago. Senator Schumer was here. I imagine the same would be said of those meetings. The same will be said about the meeting President Biden will be having with President Xi in the state of California. It's the nature of life. You can have a closed fist or an open hand. You could turn your back. You could deny that we live on the same planet and that we have a mutuality. I mean, the number one trading partner, number one, I mean, Californians need to know this, number one trading partner in America between our two states, it's California, $166 billion with China. I mean, it's tourism and trade, and we haven't recovered from the pre-pandemic tourism, and that's hurt our restaurants, our hotels, our retailers. I want to get that back. So, by the way, 2 million Chinese Americans living in California. I come from San Francisco, gateway China, the first and largest Chinatown. I want to get back to that. And look, at the end of the day, with all due respect, I don't want a new Cold War. I don't want to go to war with China. I mean, some people I think really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it scares the hell out of me. Think about that. I mean, I mean this. We got to soften the tone and tenor here. And that was the reason I came. I couldn't take the rhetoric. People need to take... We can hold strong on our strategic red lines. I didn't come here to apologize for what President Biden's done. I think he's had a masterclass in how he's been dealing internationally with China in terms of what he's just done on chips, and that impacts our states much more than most states. And I defended that decision. I defended our position as it relates to Taiwan and what's happening and the concerns we have around the Taiwan Straits. And I defended very forcefully what we're doing more broadly on a myriad of other issues, and at the same time, focusing on the areas of agreement so we can advance our common cause.
You know, some of the criticism back home is that China feels like a world away from being back home. And people are concerned about issues like homelessness, concerned about gas prices, concerned about some of the more local concerns, and they would rather see you at home dealing with homelessness than here in China. Well, what do you say to those people?
I don't know, 24/7, 7 days a week, homelessness is the number one to number 10 issue. That's all I focus on up until literally the last minute I left here at the end of a legislative session, signed unprecedented housing and homeless bills, including in Los Angeles specifically, an order of magnitude, the most significant mental health reforms in California's history that we'll be placing on the ballot. Taking a few days after a legislative session when the entire legislature is on vacation or out of town, after a remarkably successful year where we were able to focus on those issues in nuance and detail, to advance the cause of climate and partnership and trade and investment in our state, to focus on the issues of reinvigorating these relationships, I think is a pretty good use of time.
A couple of the climate things you talked about, and one that I think that's really interesting, is this idea of launching satellites, that California is about to be in the satellite business within the next month. to be able to detect methane from space. Talk about why that's important, what that's going to be like.
Well, there's no other subnational. Again, California's a unique place. We have a unique status. I've been in 5 years, I think it's, I don't know that any other governor's been out of the country less than I have. I've only been on two trips as governor.
Official trips
is in El Salvador and here. And I think primarily that's because of the pandemic. So this is not typical.
I mean, you've gone on some of the other states and democracy tour and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, which is part of the job of being governor. But overseas, it's more typical. You'll see governors consistently overseas. You saw that with Schwarzenegger Brown. You've seen it with all the other administrations. My point is to make the point that it is limited and it's time certain and it's focused on moments that I think matter and issues that matter, climate change. But a subtext of that is what you're suggesting. It's that we are, as a state, doing what nations do, and that's launching satellites. So we'll have a constellation of 8 satellites. We put $100 million approved by the legislature in the budget to address the potency and power of addressing fundamentally and mitigating issues around detection and mitigation on methane. And the fact we will be doing that in a couple of weeks, and we have it as open source so the globe can take advantage of it, just reinforces California's nation-leading status on climate change.
And leading status on technology as well.
Well, the technology and partnership with JPL and the research and development, the innovation. We have no peers. California has no peers. And that's, I think, why we were so well-treated and respected here in China. We're just in a unique status. And it's, you know what? A little pride about California. I want Californians at home to know there's a lot to be proud of. It's a special state. It's one of the most resilient states. We're on our way to be the fourth largest economy in the world. We are leading the nation in almost every critical category. In AI, we dominate on innovation and entrepreneurialism, on patents, the finest system of higher education on planet Earth. We're leading the world on carbon. Strategies to reduce carbon and change the way we produce and consume energy. And it's really a point of pride, and we want to export that, and we want to import new ideas, and we want to expand our dominance. I want us to be even more dominant. I want us to own the next century. I mean own it. I want us to dominate in green tech. I want us to dominate in this transition. And again, that's the spirit of this visit.
So I'm as much a cheerleader for California as you are. We do most things well, but we don't do everything well.
No.
High-speed rail, we don't do that well.
No, well, we haven't done it yet. No one in America has.
So when we look at the high-speed rail that we rode together this week, what goes through your mind? Why is it not working in California? And what, if anything, can be done to fix it?
Well, I level set. I got in office 4.5 years ago. I inherited where we were, and I was very honest my first day in the state. I didn't take but a few weeks. You talk about critics. A lot of folks were upset because I could have denied the reality of how that project was advancing. And so, look, I didn't need to fly to China to understand high-speed rail. I was on high-speed rail in Europe. I've been in Japan. I've been around the globe before China was even adopting high-speed rail at scale. And that's why I'm so enthusiastic about bringing it to the United States, and I'm very proud of the work Governor Schwarzenegger and Brown did in that respect. Obviously, we're not where we want to be, and we've been very sober about that, and we've tried to level set, and we have some updates to that plan we're going to be putting out very shortly in partnership with the Biden administration, because we're getting some of the infrastructure dollars, we're getting some other discretionary grants, and we have a new partner in Brightline that's going to be doing that private sector investment into Las Vegas, which will benefit Los Angeles. That's a new player in all this, and how we can look to integrate and reimagine the system. And so for me, this is a preview of things to come. I don't want to state where we are
come
now.
On, give
We've
us
been
the
working
exclusive.
For months. well, I can't, because I'm waiting for the final tap coming from the federal government on where they'll be in terms of support.
So for people that say this thing is a boondoggle, it's been years over budget,
back to my speech in 20 when I took the oath of office.
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to compete with the critics, or my point is, I've been pretty honest about what it is and what it isn't. And what I tried to do is try to do my best to at least get something out of this that can be meaningful in one of the fastest and most dynamic parts of California, which is the Central Valley. And people forget that. One of the fastest growing economies in and around the LA region is inland, the logistics, warehousing, transportation sectors, the Riverside, Ontario areas, all these parts of Central Valley that are beginning to grow and expand, and the opportunity to do something for economic development. It's not a transportation project. It's an economic development project, and then connect valley to valley, Silicon Valley and to Central Valley, and then ultimately down into Southern California, and figure out a way to get the private sector involved, which stubbornly has not been the case in the past.
One thing that's been brought up a lot this week is COVID, within the context of the fact that there hasn't been as much communication between the two countries because of COVID and because of the politics of COVID afterwards.
Yeah.
You've thought about a lot what we did right and what we did wrong, because there could be another pandemic when you're governor and you got to do this again. What do you think was the biggest lesson learned in terms of what we did wrong that maybe you would do differently the next time around?
I'm not consumed by what we did wrong. I'm consumed a little bit more by what we did right. I mean, we led the nation in terms of, I mean, there's no large state that outperformed California, one of the top performing states in terms of health, wealth, and education. Let me be specific about that. On a per capita basis, the number of people lost their lives in California is substantially lower in places like Texas and Florida. We outperformed in wealth. We contracted at a smaller rate in 2020. We expanded at a faster rate our economy in 2021. And we had less learning loss than states like Florida and elsewhere. So we outperformed the rest of the nation in that respect. I think we should acknowledge that. Number two, we also acknowledge at the time we didn't know what we didn't know. And we're experts, we're geniuses. In hindsight, though, I'm not sure that we're as smart as we could be, because we've never really done the kind of exercise of humility and accountability to really look back. Right now, the only things that have been done to look back on what could have been done better or smarter are done in a partisan lens, save what we're trying to do in California. I led an effort about 9 months ago, maybe it was a year ago, down in Sunnylands, brought world experts, we interviewed people around the world about California's approach to COVID. We said, what did we do right? What did we do wrong?
Right.
Convened for 3 days with these world leading experts. And we have a report that we're looking forward to publishing on areas where we could have proved to substantively answer that question, not emotionally answer that question, through an objective lens, not a partisan lens.
And some of it, I mean, schools shut down too long?
I mean, in certain parts of the state, they were open.
Yeah.
And that we gave local control. Remember, California has 1,050 school districts. We have a local system, the local control funding formula. It's a constitutional construct. It allows localism, and we advance localism. We don't have command and control. So the question is, do we want to shift that policy and allow a dominant force in Sacramento to determine the fate of local school districts? We allowed that local control, and in some cases, it was yes, they waited too long. In other cases, they didn't. But the point is this. If the purpose was to keep people in schools because we wanted to aid in their learning, it's an interesting fact, isn't it, that states like Florida are out there saying we opened up earlier, and yet they did worse in academic achievement. They had more learning loss in every single category. Fourth grade reading, fourth grade math, eighth grade reading, eighth grade math. Forgive me. In one category, we tied. In every other category, their students fared worse than in California. These are facts, and that's why this is not an emotional topic. We have to, I think, come out of this with a sense of humility, absolutely. I'm not naive about things we could have done differently or better, but also a little grace that California tended to do a little bit better than most other states.
Before you came here, you were in Israel. You met with Bibi Netanyahu. What was that meeting like? What did he say?
I flew in at 4:30 in the morning. I remember the pilot coming on and saying, I know a lot of you are anxious about landing in Tel Aviv. We've secured as much protection as possible. It's cover of night. It's very dark into the city. We landed and met with the president, met with the foreign minister, met with families, including members from Los Angeles, met with a family that I had met prior. In California, with American citizen, is now still held hostage, 23-year-old young man, and it was very intense and emotional. And of course, met in what would be referred as in and around the what is in essence the war room with the prime minister,
yeah.
And that's a surreal experience in the midst or in the middle of a war. And we flew out 12 hours later, flew into Cyprus, flew into Athens, flew into London, and made my way out to Hong Kong. It's been quite a week.
What'd you say to Netanyahu?
Well, I mean, I listened more than I said. I did say this, we're sending supplies. They're coming in the next couple of days. In fact, before I left Israel, I helped secure those supplies, a field hospital, wheelchairs, IVs, beds, put it in to the back of a truck. We're going to do the same for humanitarian aid into Gaza as well. And I made that point, and I made the point to make a point that there's right and wrong, and terrorism is wrong, and our condemnation of Hamas remains. And I was crystal clear about that, and let him know that Californians care. And he understood, of course, California's unique relationship to Israel, and particularly Los Angeles, unique, distinctive diaspora of Israelis in the world. And I thought it was an important visit.
A couple fun things to wrap things up. You know, on our show, we like to do these cultural favorite games, which we've done in the past, which you don't really love, to talk about things. But you had a moment with President Xi regarding that. I mean, I know he went to the Lakers game when he was, visiting America.
I gotta be careful here. This was not part of our readout with the president. I don't want to create an international incident.
Well, we know that he went to the Laker game before. We know he visited San Francisco. Was there any insight on that?
We did talk a little bit about basketball. Again, back to the humanity.
Yeah.
And what a great way to level set in terms of a serious meeting, a serious moment in the relationship between our respective countries, and talk about Kobe Bryant. I mean, and he talked very fondly about that visit to Los Angeles. He talked very fondly about the visit to San Francisco and the Golden Gate Bridge. And I reinforced our hope and expectation, which is now being realized, that he'll visit California again and meet with the president, which he'll do at AIPAC. And that's a point of pride. And I also made a point, and it's a point of pride for me, about the Warriors, not just the Lakers.
So Xi's a Kobe fan?
I mean, that's well established in this meeting. Let's just leave it in that case. We want to make him a Curry fan as well.
Okay. one thing you said in one of these meetings, which I didn't know about, you talked about that you went diving with great white sharks.
Oh, yeah.
What is that about?
Well, yeah, a few months ago, I decided to take advantage of proximity, and that's off the California coast, right off the Farallon Islands, which are very proximate to the Golden Gate Bridge, and I've long wanted to go out there and see the great white sharks, one of the world's great breeding grounds for great white sharks. You don't chum the waters, so it's a totally different experience than what you see on, so the Shark Nights or Shark Week, things on whatever, Discovery or History Channel. And you just go out, how docile it is. You just go out in a cage right near the islands, and within minutes, these magnificent creatures, curious, who you are, just slowly float by, and then another one floats by, and jellyfish floating by and through, and it's just magnificent. And it gives you, hey, look, all of this trip is about putting life in perspective and having some humility, back to my point about grace, putting things in perspective. Climate, to me, puts my life in perspective. We're so consumed by situations, not enough about sustainable values. Being there with these magnificent creatures in their element, put your life in perspective. Who's really in control? Where's the real power lie? And so that was a magical moment, and I encourage others to do it safely.
Your protective detail, it allows you to go out?
Yeah, they weren't allowed to even go in the cage. I was freedom, finally freedom. I felt more free in the cage with great white sharks than I have in weeks and months.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. And then one other story I saw about you that said, after being governor, you really want to talk about football. Is that true?
Is that true? I do love football.
Okay, maybe I got
I'm a little obsessed with football, but that's a whole other conversation. Yeah, maybe, you know, look, I grew up, wanting to own a football team, but, you know, you have to be worth $25 billion to...
You get a minority stake. Everybody's got minority stakes these days.
I know exactly. Yeah. I want one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. So big picture, when you just to wrap things up, when you think about this trip and you talk about it, talk about it with your kids, you look, but this is the kind of thing that you'll like remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
What are the images? What are the things that you'll remember most from this trip?
Well, I've said this to you before, and I say this to myself all the time, because I want to practice what I preach. I don't want to dream of regretting. I don't want to say I could have, should have, would have. I want to say, you know, in 4 or 5 years to my kids, you know, we turned our back on China, and all of a sudden now we're at conflict, and we're, you know, potentially sort of these regional wars, God forbid, trade wars, economic war, military intervention. I mean, just think about that for my kids. Think about all of us. What kind of world is that? We don't need that. I grew up in that sort of framework of Russia versus the United States and all that friction, and you know, I just don't want to see that for my kids. And so I'm just trying to do my best to be human I deeply understand our difference. I mean, I express them literally, and not just again with the minister, with the vice president, who I've known for years, and we went at it a little bit in terms of some of the issues that define the differences of that we have. But for I think my kids, I just want them to see an example that I'm willing, honestly, I keep saying, have an open hand, not a closed fist. Defend your values, defend the national security. I love my country. I'll take a backseat to no one in my passion for America and our values. I mean it at our best. I'm also very critical in the context, and I'm proud that I can be critical of what's happening, as you suggest, in those red states, and the freedom to be able to express yourself. But I also am proud that I have the freedom as governor, as a citizen of the world, but also as the governor of the fourth, soon to be fourth largest economy, that has direct foreign trade and investment that is the highest in the United States. Our number one trading partner, again, China and California. To have the privilege to be here at this critical time and talk about the issue of our time, climate change, in 30 or 40 meetings, in detail and nuance, and to make the case anew how we have to increase our ambition. And for my kids and grandkids, I hope they'll look back at their dad or grandfather and say, you know what, at least he did everything he could when he had the opportunity.
Well, you had an open hand with the president of China. You had an open hand literally with cranes. And fed them with an open hand.
I know,
and
we do.
So I'll reach out my open hand. Say, Governor, thank you so much.
Great to be back on.
Time. It's been a hell of a week.
It has been.
Our thanks to Governor Newsom. Our thanks to you for watching. Again, check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/AlexMichelson, to watch the full show, the video, the context. I think you'd really like it. And I also hope you'll consider giving us feedback. I'd love to hear what you think of this trip. I know there's a lot of people that are excited about it and a lot of people that were very angry about it. But either way, it'd be interesting to hear your perspective. Reach out to me in social media at Alex Michelson. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Issue Is, back in America. Thanks so much.